Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and I am very excited about our show. I have invited author Irene Watson to the program to tell us a little bit about her newly revised memoir, The Sitting Swing, The Wisdom to Know the Difference, and it's out now on Loving Healing Press. So I have to tell you that this is a very special show, as Irene is also my mother, and I am just so very proud of her for having the courage to write this book, and then as well the courage to embark on her amazing journey of self-discovery. So let me tell you about her before we get started. Irene Watson holds a master's degree in psychology with honors from Regis University in Denver, Colorado. The emphasis of her studies have been in the areas of spirituality and psychosynthesis. Irene's life has taken her on many paths with breakthrough results and exemplar growth to find her authentic and true self. At present, she is the managing editor of her book review and author publicity company, Reader Views. As well, she is the president of a nonprofit organization, Higher Power Foundation, Inc., through which she facilitates transformational retreats. Irene lives with her husband on the banks of Barton Creek in Austin, Texas, along with their very well-loved Pomeranian and their recently acquired rescued cat and cockatiel. You can find out more about Irene through her website, irenewatson.com. So with that being said, let's get going with this interview. So welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Irene.
Well, hi, Juanita. Thanks for inviting me. This is special for me, too. It's a very touching intro that you gave me. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, congratulations. This is a reissue, and it really, I mean, it's fantastic. I love the new cover, and I understand that you actually were on several top 10 lists in different categories on Amazon this week.
I was, Juanita. This is really exciting because I did have the top 10 bestseller in self-help and also in mental and spiritual healing. That was really exciting because that was a goal of mine to make a top 10, and I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you. Congratulations. So what were your original intentions when you wrote this book, and has that changed at all with this second version, with this reissue?
Well, my original was to actually write my story, and I guess I go back to thinking of the fact that everybody has a story within them, and we certainly do, and I so agree with that. But looking back at my experience growing up and the recovery process that I went through, I just felt that I needed to tell people about it and to give them some hope and vision that actually their lives can be changed regardless of what their upbringing is or what their beliefs are, that there is a way to rewrite some scripts and make a new life for themselves. And so my intent was really to tell my story, but not in a sense as my story, but a story that people can parallel with and read into it their own lives. That was my intent. And with the reissue, several things happened, Juanita, with that. I learned a lot from the first publication. We did have to do some major editing, and so that was done. But I also added an afterword to it, too, because my readers of the first issue had a lot of questions. What happened? They wanted to know more. So with the reissue, what I did was add an afterword. So it kind of caught up my story to where I am now.
Mm. So will you be doing a second memoir, or is that afterword basically taking care of any what happened after, any questions, anything else people would want to know about your life to this point?
I think the afterword covers it because it takes it to this point, and I just don't see another memoir coming up. I see some other books coming up, but not definitely not a continuation of the memoir.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, today anyway, who knows, tomorrow may be different.
Yeah. Well, so for listeners that have not yet read the book or haven't heard your story, why don't you give us a brief description of what this book is really about?
The book is actually has two parts. it first starts off at a treatment center that I went to in 1994. It starts off there and then does my flashback into my childhood, the upbringing I had and my experiences, and then on into my young adult life and just to the point of when I went into the treatment center. And then the second part of the book then depicts my experience at the treatment center and all the things that I went through and all the ahas. And basically, that's what it's all about, so that people can actually, when they read it, they can parallel their lives to the childhood and then have this hope that there is a way to heal.
Mm. And understand more maybe about why their life looks the way it does. You know what?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So when was it that you decided to go into the treatment facility? What was there a catalyst for that? Did you understand the whole recovery process at that time? How did you end up at Avalon?
That's a good question, because I kind of laugh and say, well, the reason I went is because most of my friends had gone through Avalon. And, you know, I can laugh about it, but in a sense, that is true, because I saw something in them when they came back, or just analyzing their lives and looking at their lives, that they had something that I wanted, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. So that was just basically the catalyst. But yet on the other level, I knew that there was something in my own life that I was not happy with. I had some behaviors and thoughts that I knew were not healthy, but I just didn't know how to address them or what to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you know that you were going to have to delve as deeply as you did into your childhood when you were in treatment?
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah.
I didn't. I mean, you know, I heard, but of course, nobody really told me exactly what it was, but even if they told me, I don't think I would listen.
Mm-hmm.
I really did go with quite an attitude, and it shows in my book, that I just resisted and resisted the whole time, because in my mind, there was really nothing wrong on the outside, and I was so conditioned to accept that and believe it, that's the attitude I went with, until they finally wrote me down, and it's like, oh, okay, so I do have some issues.
Mm-hmm. And what was the point for you where you got to that point where you stopped blaming, or I guess it's being the victim, and you really decided to take the responsibility to go on this journey and to really start peeling those layers of that onion?
I guess it was just a lot of points. And there again, I go back to just seeing other people and, you know, the happiness that they were happy and so on. And just on one level, that there was that. I just wasn't happy.
Mm.
And so knowing that there was a different way, that's when I really decided. And I guess that there was an experience that happened when I was in the treatment center that just really opened me up. I had resisted and resisted for, you know, several weeks, and we were there only for 28 days, but majority of it, in fact, for the first 3 weeks, I did a lot of resisting, and then there was just this big shift that happened. I finally, basically, I guess the bottom line is I just really surrendered, totally surrendered, and gave up all my control.
Mm, and that's key.
That is so key. I was so in control when I was there. It was just, you know, I laugh at it now, because when I look back and it's like, oh, wow. And I was ticked off at the facilitators because they were trying to tell me something and I knew different.
Oh, man. Well, tell us how this control, this need for control or this illusion of control that you had over your life, how was that related to your upbringing? Because you were very much raised in a controlled environment. So how do those two correlate?
I believe they correlate in the fact that that's how I learned. My parents, of course, were my role models, and my mother was a very controlling mother. So I didn't have any other role models. I didn't know of any other ways. And so I just directly learned from her and everything I learned. And when I look back, and some of the patterns that I had and some of the behaviors that I had were definitely just like my mother, because that's what I learned, was directly from her. And not to say that that was bad or good. I certainly came out with a lot of strength from that. But I also had to work on the fact that I needed to go let go of my control and change my script.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the cultural roots played a very big part in how you were raised, and I know that this is something that is touching readers very deeply. You know, they're very much relating to the immigrant, the whole immigrant theme, that you had parents that were immigrants and very isolated in the community that that you grew up in. So how do you feel the cultural aspect? I mean, I understand this is a very matriarchal culture.
Mm-hmm, very.
Mm-hmm.
It is. You know, my parents, they married in Canada, but they both immigrated from what was Russia at that time, and then Poland, and now it's the Ukraine. So, you know, that's the area that they were from, and they came into a community that was basically people from the villages and that they came from, and everybody was pretty much related. And so the culture was pretty much just what they brought with them from Europe, but also that they created in their own community. And like you say, Juanita, it was very matriarchal. And also, as I reflect back, I remember, you know, my grandmother was the matriarch, and she basically told my mother what to do and how to raise me and where to go and how to dress. And I know that when I look back now and all the things that I do know, there was some rebellion there too. But then she learned from her mother how to be a parent and how to act in the community and what to do, and so that's how I was raised also. Now, you know, I do believe that it is cultural to a point, but also as I'm talking to more and more people that are reading my book, this doesn't only span in that culture. It also spans in other cultures too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It must be very strange as well to have some of those deeply, deeply rooted cultures kind of being placed in a completely different world as immigrants and trying to, I don't know, cohesively live in that world. I mean, it's just like the two didn't fit. So there must be a lot of people out there that have had this kind of an experience.
Oh, I'm sure. And I can reflect back to my own moving into the United States from Canada. I mean, when you think about Canada and the United States, they're very similar. But yet, I found that moving here, and especially particularly to Texas, that there are some cultural differences. And I did have to learn some new cultures. I did have to learn some new things. And also some of the words used in Canada, that they are here, spelling. I had to learn to spell some words totally differently. So I can understand that, but I think so much is a very minute amount compared to somebody like my parents and my grandparents who came to from a country that spoke Ukrainian, coming to a country that is totally English-speaking, except the community, of course, that they were in. Now, my grandmother, my grandparents on both sides never did learn how to speak English.
Now, how, at this point, after you've gone through treatment and you're very much well on your way on your whole recovery journey, how connected do you feel with your Ukrainian heritage and that background?
You know, not much anymore. I was really quite connected at one time, and, you know, even at the foods and the traditions and so on, but they don't fit for me anymore. Specifically the foods. I mean, you know, I don't eat like that anymore. We just don't eat that way anymore. And at one time I used to have a craving for them, but no, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know, you know, there's two ways to look at that, but that is my choice right now.
Well, does this play into the whole idea of rewriting scripts? Well, does that then play into the whole idea about rewriting scripts? I mean, maybe you've changed who you are, the scripts of who you are to this point.
Yeah, I really believe that, Juanita, because I have decided to rewrite the scripts because those behaviors and those attitudes and thoughts and beliefs, and specifically beliefs, just do not fit anymore. And that's what's really great about our lives, is that we can rewrite our scripts. We can start all over again. We can live a life that we actually want to live.
Mm-hmm. That we choose to live.
And choose to live. Exactly. Exactly.
So tell us what this term rewriting scripts means, because this does come up in the work that you do, and I know that you're very, very passionate about this whole idea of rewriting scripts. So what does it mean exactly, and how do you do it?
Good question.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is, it takes some time, and it takes some dedication, and it takes persistence, and really the wanting to rewrite the script. Rewriting scripts is basically looking at what your life was like, what beliefs you have, what patterns you have, and looking at them and saying, hey, is this really me? Is this really what I want to do? Is this something that fits in my life? And if you answer no to all those questions that you ask yourself, then it's time to just make that shift, and we call it rewriting scripts, and write your own life. What do you want to do from today on? How do you? What are your beliefs? What are your attitudes? How do you want to live it? And so that's basically what it is. And really knowing that you do not have to live the patterns and the beliefs and everything else that's been passed down for generations and generations and generations. That's just like, no, you can stop it right now, right at this moment today, and make that decision to rewrite it, that you do not need to follow those patterns, and move on. And what's really great about that is the generations ahead of you do not have to then take all that stuff.
Mm.
I call it stuff because it's just so much stuff from, thousands of years ago, and live it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like it's making a shift from basically waking up in your life, changing from living unconsciously to really living consciously and in the moment.
Oh, well said.
Yeah.
That's it. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. So is this something that you basically do once and things change, or do you continuously have to go through this process?
Well, it would be wonderful.
Yeah.
If it was just once.
You're right.
Fortunately, no. It's a continuous thing because things come up, and yes, once you address that issue, then yes, it will change. And so then you probably do not have to go into that area again, or maybe you will, because then you start questioning. But what this is really it's a continuous process. It's not a one-time deal. Unfortunately, that from the moment that we decide that we want to change our lives, that's when the work really starts, and that it's a daily process. It's daily.
And so is this just related to the way you were brought up and your family heritage, or is this about also maybe at different stages of your life changing a script?
Oh, definitely at the different stages of life, because we go through seasons of our lives. We go through stages in our lives. And, for me, I know that what worked last year doesn't work anymore this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make that shift. And it's like what you had said earlier, it's that peeling the onion. And, as we peel the onion, we have to work on more stuff. And what worked, as I say, yesterday even, may not work today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a continuous, but it's a conscious continuous.
Right. And I think that when you say work, it ends up at some point not necessarily being work. You're not dredging up all this stuff that feels heavy, but the work ends up being fun because you do feel freedom in the whole process.
Oh, so for sure. Absolutely. There is, and it's like, oh, wow, and there's that relief. And I just love it when I get the big ahas.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, I didn't like those ahas because it just, then I would beat myself up.
And then it meant you would have to change, and that's scary.
You got it.
So is this something, I know you're doing workshops and retreats at this point, is that something that you're addressing in the workshops, rewriting scripts?
Yes, there is some of that work that's done, and definitely given the tools, the people that go to the workshops and retreats do get the tools on how to do it, and what I do is I start them off, and then they can continue working the tools on their own.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, since I've just mentioned workshop, let's talk a little bit about your upcoming workshop here in September of 2008. This is a women's retreat?
This is a women's retreat, and it's with the Higher Power Foundation, and I am the president of the Higher Power Foundation. And what we do is we give funds to people that need to go to retreats and workshops to better their lives. And so we're also putting on this women's retreat as a fundraiser so that we can help others.
Oh, and so then you refer out through grants and scholarships to retreat to other treatment centers?
Yes. Oh,
okay, okay.
Go to other treatment centers or workshops or wherever they need to go.
Okay. Well, great. Well, I wanted to make sure we mentioned another key part of what you talk about in your book about your journey, and that was really understanding. Well, I really would like to talk a little bit about the whole concept of birth order, and you bring this up in your book, and it really has been key. Understanding birth order has been key to your whole journey of self-discovery. So tell us a little bit about birth order and how you were influenced or affected by it.
There's been a lot of studying done on birth orders and how we take on specific roles at the time that we are born. And so, as I say, there are many studies, but the one that I know of and that was actually used at Avalon during the time that I was there was the firstborn. It's called Hero. The secondborn is the Rebel. The thirdborn is the Mascot. And then the fourth is the Lost Child. And if there's a fifth, then they start all over again. And this has to do with the fact that when the first child is born, they become the hero. They're the first child. They're basically the role model, and they're put up on the pedestal by the parents. Now, when the second child comes, the hero is there already, and he's like the number, here's your, the number one. And the rebel comes, and it's like they look up that, and they start not fitting in, because all of a sudden the child is the second child, not only in placement, but also in the fact that there's already one hero. And when the third child comes, the third child looks at this family structure and says, oh, there's the hero. He or she is getting all this attention. Then there's the rebel that's getting the attention because actually the way that they get the attention is through the rebel. Then that's the mascot. Then they start making jokes. They're trying to get the attention. And so they're the ones that just kind of, you know, ha, 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 look at me.
Mm.
And then the fourth child is the lost child. At that time, all the other kids are older. The hero's probably, you know, 4 or 5 years older. And here's this lost child looking at his family structure and saying, wow, there's the hero. There's the, you know, he's getting all the attention, role model, blah, blah. Then there's the rebel that's getting all the attention because they, in fact, are the rebel. And then there's the mascot doing all the jokes. And then there's this lost child that says, whoa, I really don't fit in. Mm-hmm. And they wander off someplace and go in their room with a book or whatever. And that's kind of just in a nutshell. But there's, of course, a lot more going on. And so when we look at that, and we really can place ourselves into where we are. Now, in my case, there was a child that was born, my brother. He died at, I believe it's 3 months old. And he was actually the hero in my parents' eyes and hearts and minds because he was the first child. When I came along, there was no place for me to be that place anymore because there was a child, even though that child was not in existence in physical form, he was still there in emotional form,
mm-hmm.
in my parents. So there I am. I'm the rebel. And so a lot of these things that went on in my upbringing didn't fit because I rebelled against all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was still a point where my parents were expecting me to be the hero, but in fact, they didn't allow me to be there. And, in fact, because I was the second born, I couldn't be there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. So how what kind of acting out did that look like? I mean, was it rebelling against your mother, rebelling against everything?
Pretty much everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And fortunately, I'm going to tell you a story that's in my book. Unfortunately, I live in a very small community because I tell you, you know, I can laugh about it now and say if I lived in the city, I would definitely be a gang member. Because that was really, you know, I just like total rebellion. And one story, let's say, that's in my book is I decided that I was going to rebel the town against the town and against the kids. And, I mean, we live in a community like a, you know, the town of 25 people or something like that. But in my mind, I created this whole scenario of creating a gang. And we were going to have this clubhouse and so on. And it was just like I went on and on and got this all planned. And the deal was that we were going to all go out at night and we were going to find these dogs that are sleeping and grab them by the back leg and swing them around and swing them up in the air.
Good thing you didn't.
It's a good thing I didn't. So I told my, finally when I got this all planned out, I told my best friend about it. Well, she just gave me this funny look, like she had no idea where I was coming from or anything. We weren't on the same page. She was a hero. I was the rebel. And so, therefore, we could not get on the same page. I mean, she convinced me that that wasn't going to work. I mean, she was just very, you know, astute about it, and it's like, well, blah, blah, you know, so on, and she just convinced me it wasn't going to work, so that just went out the window and so much for my gang. But so that's an example of what happens in, you know, with birth orders and roles that we take on.
Is it typical for the rebel to not have a sense of belonging?
Yeah, it is. It really is, and it's just sort of a misplaced place. You know, it's just been actually in the last couple of years that I, myself, found a place that I'm not misplaced, because for all these years, I've really felt that I didn't belong.
And where is that place? What does that look like?
Acceptance. Acceptance by others, and that's the biggest thing, because as a rebel, we don't feel accepted by others. So when we aren't accepted, when we feel we aren't accepted by others, then we end up creating all these situations to really, you know, work against ourselves and to sabotage ourselves. But once we feel accepted, and once we feel we can accept ourselves, and that's one of the key issues, too, is accepting yourself, then as we look out into the other world, we see others accepting us, too. Yeah, it's an interesting process.
So it's interesting, you know, that this the whole recovery process isn't an instant thing. You know, it takes a lot of time, and it, you know, so you're saying just in the last couple of years you've come to that level of understanding and acceptance. So, I mean, that's inspiring for people that may think, well, they're doing it wrong, or, you know, my life doesn't look exactly like I want it to, or I don't feel quite the way I want to right now, that there is hope that, you know, if you just keep on keeping on.
Yes. Exactly. And the other adage that's, you know, one day at a time. And if you have to read and break it down to 1 hour at a time, it's okay. Because it's just, you know, it's in that moment.
So what then does the wisdom to know the difference mean? That's the subtitle of your new book.
Finding the wisdom to know the difference, yes. And that's basically the bottom line, is to go deep inside into wherever your center is and just look for that wisdom, because innately we have that wisdom. And when we get to that point where we find that wisdom, we can then look on the outside and know what is right or wrong for ourselves. And basically it's not, you know, what's right or wrong for anybody else, but it's for us. What is it within us that works for us? What is it that makes us the better person? What is it that gets us connected to whatever universal belief you have? And it's just basically it's finding that wisdom within.
I think that's a very good point to make, that we are all so unique, and we have to go in and hear our own voice and get in touch with our own truth and our own wisdom, and not look at what someone else's truth is or what their wisdom is.
Exactly. I mean, you know, but for a long time, I was in a place where I was looking at everybody else's wisdom and wanting it, but not really looking deep inside myself and knowing that I've got it, you know, maybe something similar or my own.
for sure. How important was spirituality to your recovery process? I mean, most treatment, recovery, 12-step programs, it all has a very spiritual base to it. How important is spirituality to you and your journey?
Very, very important. To me, it's grounding. It's a belief that I have, and it's a belief that works for me. And as human beings, I think that we are designed to have some type of a belief. And for me, the belief is being really connected with my God and being connected within that higher power within myself.
And so do you think that is crucial to this kind of a journey?
Yes, I believe it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I find a lot of people that are paralleling with me on this journey also feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, that said, Juanita, you know, each person has to find their own space and their own place within and define whatever spirituality means to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just remember being at Avalon, and one of the questions that was asked of us at one time, define God, and here we are, we're 32 of us in the session, and each one of us had a different description, a different label. And so, you know, that just shows that we can't just define spirituality or God or whatever belief system we have as to just one little speck in a mirror, one little box, because it's different for each one of us.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. So how has then healing the wounds of your past, you know, you've rewritten so many scripts to this point, how has it really changed who you are today? How do you see yourself at this point? And do you feel that you've come full circle in your life now?
Healing the wounds is really important because, you know, when I was looking back and when I was at Avalon and reflecting back into my life, and when I was also writing the book, of course, I had to revisit, and as
mm-hmm.
I'm working more and more in my stuff, as I call it.
I imagine that brought up a lot of stuff when you were writing.
Oh, it brought up a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did have to look at those. And, you know, but there's a time that you just, like, look at that and say, okay, that was my life then. That doesn't have to be my life now. I can look at that, and I can accept it, that for some reason or another, I had to go through that particular journey or those experiences. And, you know, just chalk it up to that. Those were my experiences. But also take a look at all those things and turn them into strength. Because I know that a lot of those things that I had to go through gave me strength, a lot of strength that I actually have now. And so that really, the healing of the wounds is really an acceptance and being okay with it.
I think that's a really great point to make, and I'm sure that is critical to the process of dealing with, you know, wounds from childhood, is finding out what the positives are. What did you get that out of that actually makes you who you are today in a positive sense?
Exactly. And, you know, the only time, the time that I was able to actually do that is going through a forgiveness process, forgiving myself and forgiving my parents. But that's the only way that we can do that is actually, you know, accepting it and forgiving, because it's so in the past now.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel then that part of your life has kind of come to a close, and you really at this point are co-creating to produce the life that you want, and so those influences don't have the effect that they once did?
Oh, for sure. You know, as I kind of reflect back at some of the experiences and stuff, and I can laugh about them, I can just, like, you know, roll my eyes and, oh, boy, and just move on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, when I can't, because, hey, I'm human too, and there are times when something triggers,
mm-hmm.
I need to say this, I get triggered, and I will just go immediately back into, you know, flashback into that situation. And fortunately, as the days go on, I spend less time in those until I catch myself and, like, whoa, just a minute here. What are you doing back there?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to say that it's getting better, but there again, I'm not at 100%.
I think that keeps us in check and it keeps us humble.
Exactly. And you know, the biggest thing is to admit.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
There's no perfect here.
No.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure that we mention your website again. It's irenewatson.com. And so what can we find up on your new website? And that is a great website as well.
Yes, it is a new website.
Mm-hmm.
I had it redesigned and along with my book. And there's information on the website about my book. They can read the first chapter. I've got a video on there. I've got somebody reading my first chapter. If you don't have time to read it, somebody, you can listen to it in an MP3. And this is there's also a link to another book that I co-edited with, and there's a link there. But also, if you sign up for my newsletter updates, you can download a free copy of a new book of the other book that I have co-edited.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, that's great. And I know, I mean, you have a lot of articles up there, resource lists, a lot of other books that have really influenced you.
Yes, that's on my blog. I do have a
okay.
blog. There's a link that goes from my website to my blog,
mm-hmm.
and the blog does have articles and some reviews, and yes, some of the books that have influenced me, and actually some of those books, the titles I use as resources in my revised edition. The revised edition, Juanita, I just want to tell you, does have resources at the back now. It also has a reading guide along with the afterword that we had talked about. So there's more interaction for the reader there, too.
What do you all have in the reading guide? What is that about?
Questions, just for people to take a look at it once they read the book and reflect on their own lives.
Mm.
And basically what the questions are is maybe taking a portion out of my book and just having the people reflect on that and reflect into their own lives. So it's kind of a self-study, too.
And this is a self-help nature of this book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it very much is a self-help book. It is a memoir, but it has that really unique quality to be able to open one up to their own past and their own experiences.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my experiences are in there, but there is so much in there that is dialogue from the facilitators, Lillian and Jill from the Avalon, and I'm using their real names because they did give me the permission to do that. And, fortunately, I have a very good memory, and I was able to capture what they said. And, I mean, there is some profound information there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been told people would just read this over and over again because it is so deep. So, yes, it is a self-help book with a little bit of my life in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention as well, too, I saw the video on your blog, and it really is fantastic. I mean, I think that as a great start for anyone listening today, just to jump on your blog and check that video out, and that it's a powerful video.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
It gives some information not only about the book, but about us, about what our needs are. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great first step right there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has just been such a delight today. This has been so much fun, Irene, and I just wanted to let you share any final thoughts that maybe we weren't able to get to in the interview. I know listeners that are probably very much enjoying everything that you have to say, so if there's anything else that you would like to put out there, please do.
Yeah, you know, I think what I really want to say is it's never, ever, 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 ever too late to rewrite your script. And, you know, my tagline is, it's never too late to change your life. It's never too late to heal. And today could be the next day of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming to the program today, and best to you.
Thanks, Juanita. This has been just such a pleasure, and just a pleasure the fact that I was able to be interviewed by my own daughter.
I know.
Who has also rewritten strips, big time.
Yes, that's true. I mean, we could go on and get very personal with this, but maybe for another day.
All right.
Okay.
That's a deal.
Okay. All right. Take care, Mom. All right, listeners, I've been talking with Irene Watson. Yes, my dear mother. She has just reissued her book, The Sitting Swing, The Wisdom to Know the Difference. It is out now on Loving Healing Press. And her website, once again, is irenewatson.com. Please do check out this book. It is powerful, transformative, you will be changed by reading this book. So thank you once again for listening to Inside Scoop Live, this very special interview today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.